Hello, friends. I'm Luke, and I serve on the music team at Holy Family. We continue to hear stories from people like you who listen to the Holy Family podcast and consider Holy Family your church. And whether you're someone who's constantly on the go, hasn't found a church community where you live to which you can belong, or someone who's wondering about the shape of your faith, we are honored to be with you by sharing these reflections from our Sunday liturgies. We rely on the generosity of our congregation, which includes you wherever you listen, to help our ministry achieve and maintain financial health. If this podcast has been a gift to you, would you consider making a contribution so that we can continue offering resources that welcome questions, curiosities, and doubts? You can make a gift by following the link in our show notes. That's at holyfamilyhtx.org. From Holy Family HTX, an Episcopal church for people without a church, this is the Holy Family Podcast, a collection of ideas about leading a Jesus-centered life. We clearly explore the church's understandings while bringing our own questions, curiosities, and doubts, and we never demand fake agreement. Theological exploration is just better that way. So, let's take a moment of silence as we get ready to contemplate today's ideas.
So the message of the cross is foolishness. And we preach Christ crucified. But why? Why did Jesus have to die? If you teach a Sunday school class at a church and you ask the group, why did Jesus die? You get kind of two categorical answers. The first category is like more history answers. Well, he suffered under Pontius Pilate. Kind of give the socio-political, you know, some things went down and he ticked off the wrong people and, you know, went bad for him. Then the other half of the class will answer with more theological answers. Well, and that just kind of opens up a whole toolbox in and of itself. And there's lots of different responses that can come out of the more theological answers as to why Jesus had to die. Now, in last week's gospel, Jesus told his closest followers, I am going to the cross. Do you recall how that went over for them? Particularly in Peter. He hated this idea. I mean, genuinely hated this idea. Never forget that when they finally did come to arrest Jesus, Peter was the one who pulled out his sword, and I actually think he tried to go for a headshot against the arrester because it says that he cut off the guy's ear. Have you ever thought about the weird mechanics of that? How do you pull that off? Like, is it a pretty short blade and you have very precise, like, how do you just not go down into the, I mean, I hate to be so crass about it, but like, how do you not go down into the shoulder blade if you're getting the ear, right? I mean, the thing's got to be super sharp, and you've got to be, like, really skilled. And I just don't see anything in Peter's story ahead of time that would lead me to believe that he was also a very skilled swords person. So I think what happened was Peter was so committed to saying, no, we will not let you go to the cross, that actually he pulled out his sword and he went for a headshot, but the arrester ducked like this. And I think he just cleaned the side of his head and took the ear off. So you should really believe Peter when he says, no, 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 we're not going to let that happen to you. Totally against the idea of you going to the cross. We want you to have a kingdom. And while I grew up in central Illinois thinking that, you know, Satanism were like pentagrams and goat's heads and black lights and candles or something, actually the text last week says, no, the truly satanic thing is wanting Jesus without a cross. Get behind me, Satan. which has got to be on the Mount Rushmore of harshest things Jesus has ever, like, said to another human being, right? I mean, can you imagine Jesus turning to you in response to something you said and saying, "Now, you are not thinking God's thoughts. You are thinking like Satan. You get behind me, Satan." I mean, this is the bizarre thing. We think, you know, to be satanic is something culturally, but to just be very crass and matter of fact about it, in the gospel, it is simply Jesus Christ without a cross. There has always been a temptation to practice Christianity in America either without the cross or without God's kingdom. Now, God's kingdom is my shorthand for what God's kingdom is. It's God's dream for this earth. Okay, so that's what we're talking about there when we say kingdom. And there's been a temptation in American Christianity to either go, you know, hard in the paint for the cross or to go really hard in the paint for God's dream for the earth. Now, maybe you grew up in a cross without a kingdom approach. This approach makes a really big deal out of Jesus's place. It's, you know, he died for you, for your sin, blah, blah, blah. And it emphasizes the need that you as an individual have to take personal responsibility to accept that Jesus died for you. Okay. You probably walked down an aisle at that church at some point and, you know, when they played the song one more time and gave your life to Jesus. Now, if an individual in that kind of approach, like if you're in a position and you get cornered by someone who's really poor and you have a dollar, like, sure, you can give it to them, or sure, you can give a beggar a bottle of water, but simply because it's just nice to do, or you got cornered, but it really has nothing to do with the state of your soul and keeping you, like, in God's good graces. The important thing in this model is that Jesus died on a cross, which gives you the chance to have your sins forgiven. But that only gets activated when you say a certain prayer, or you do a certain ritual, or you attend church a certain amount of times, or whatever. And this approach is always tempted to say, well, what good is it to save somebody's, you know, empty stomach if they're just going to end up in the bad place? That's one approach. But maybe you didn't. Maybe you didn't grow up in that church. Maybe you grew up in a more kingdom without cross approach. A kingdom without cross approach makes a really big deal out of what we would call social justice, although I have a professor in my mind who once quipped, I'll clean his language up a bit. He said, "What the heck kind of justice isn't social?" Which is a good question. But in these kinds of churches, you really focus on justice in this earth rather than talking about Jesus dying. In this approach, you take the Sermon on the Mount very seriously, put it into action. The Lord's Prayer has this line where it says, "Let your kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven." And so you go really hard there and you care very much about what actually happens in this community. And you emphasize the need that each community and each group has for taking social responsibility for implementing Jesus Christ's vision for the world, where everybody flourishes and nobody is left out. Yeah, if you really start to feel guilty about something, you could say a prayer, ask for forgiveness. But basically, the cross doesn't have anything to do with God's kingdom. And in this approach, Jesus' death is basically just like an inspiring story about another person who had a good vision for the world, but the powers that be snuffed it out. And, you know, man, he had such promise. But we can be inspired by the things that he does. And the important thing is that Jesus said a whole lot about the last being first, lifting up the poor, lifting up the oppressed, and not making a big deal about long prayers and flowing robes. This approach is tempted to say something like what I read this person on Twitter once who said, no, we're progressive. It's cool. We're totally not like conservative Christians. It's so awesome. We just literally talk about how we're not them all the time. It's great. And so here's the deal. Whichever way you came up, going heavy with the cross, going heavy with the kingdom, to present these as either or options, as they typically are in American Christianity, as if they are in opposition to one another, just think that we can do better than that. This is an attempt to ultimately separate the life of Jesus' kingdom from the death of Jesus' cross. And I think that's a crucial theological mistake, and there's a lot that we're going to leave on the table if we go one way or the other. So instead of holding the cross and God's dream for the earth in opposition to one another, I want to invite you to look closely at Jesus and see how he holds them differently. Not in opposition, but in an opposable tension. When the Bible says that the message of the cross is foolishness, that's pretty easy for me to understand, to be honest with you. I think, yep, that sounds dumb. That sounds wrong. Like, the cross just, that cannot be where this is all going. And I think a lot of us, eventually, if we keep up with the faith or try to breathe fresh life into it, the older we get, I think eventually we get embarrassed by the cross in some sort of way. Which is, upon deeper reflection, a dangerous theological position, because the scriptures keep presenting to us a crucified Christ, and I don't know how to get access to a non-crucified Christ. It's just not there. And this is because the crucified Christ is God with us. Remember at Christmas time we called Jesus Emmanuel? Remember what Emmanuel means? Literally, it's something like, with us is God. God has come to be with us. And what you get on the cross is God's fundamental commitment to being with us all the way to death. The cross shows us just how committed God is to being with us. I mean, you ever thought about it from God's perspective? Oh, you want to go be with the humans? Cool. Up until what point? Like all the way? Because they go to death. You really sure you want to do that? But God is so fundamentally committed to being with us that there is no place we're going to go that God has not already gone God's self. And so God comes to be with us even unto death. I mean, based on my pastoral experience, the biggest reason you have for fearing death is that you fear that ultimately you're going to be alone. That's what's ultimately so scary about it, based on what I hear. And so God comes and joins us in death so that we know that even in death, we will not be alone. We have not been abandoned by this God, and this God will be with us all the way. And more than that. Theologian James Cone wonders if American Christians have ever truly considered the cross, if they've never thought about the cross. He actually calls it a bifocality. He said, how the heck is it that so many white American Christians will talk about the cross and yet they don't ever think about that at the same time as they think about the terror lynchings of black people in this country? When the Acts of the Apostles literally says that Jesus died by being hanged on a tree. Okay, I mean, Jesus is dead. The cross is not Jesus dying of old age, right? He didn't get a cold. He didn't, like, he was taken out. Okay? Now, in Cone's book, Black Theology and Black Power, he says that racism is a complete denial of the incarnation. It is a complete denial of the fact that God has come to be with us. In other words, he calls the modern church back to the early church, where the crucifixion of Jesus is not some embarrassing, outdated idea. But Professor Cone helps us remember that the crucifixion is actually God's critique of our human violent oppression. Jesus didn't slip and fall onto the cross. He was put there by humans. Okay? So the cross is actually God's critique of our violence, and it transforms our worst violence into God's true power that Professor Cone, in a beautiful way, says forces us to behold difficult juxtapositions of both beauty and brutality simultaneously. Yeah. So when the Bible says that we preach Christ crucified, this is a way to show us humans how deeply committed we are to violence and to using power against each other to get what we want in the world. To put a fine point on it, it is not God the Father who put Jesus to death. We did. That is the power of the cross. It demonstrates God's desire to be with us, even at our worst. God comes to be with us, and we are so uninterested in that, we said, please go away forever. Our obsession with putting everything under control gets called out at the cross. The cross is when our obsession for control became so out of bounds that we tried to put God in control and nail the God who came to be with us down. Then we let out our wrath upon Jesus. Then we let out our violence against Jesus. We tried to send God away forever, but God's ways are higher than our ways, thanks be to God. God took our attempt to dethrone God and transformed the cross into the throne of heaven by exposing our power plays and power moves for the cheap charades that they always are. All we know are how to work each other on angles and maneuvers and massaging it a little bit, scooching this over here, so ultimately I can get what I want through you. And the cross exposes us. The cross is where our love, maybe even lust, for what James Allison calls the myth of sacred violence is exposed. We learn that we humans are sinners at the cross, and we continue to only imagine a way of being human that continues to traffic in the ways of death and violence. We don't know how to imagine a world where somebody somewhere isn't suffering and being oppressed and, yeah, probably being killed. But look at what we get to enjoy for their sacrifice. The cross shows us what a broken way of being human that is. The cross is where we are finally able to hear God say, you did this terrible violence to me. But James Allison says, but not once does Jesus accuse us of it. He tells us the truth about it, but he doesn't accuse us. He says, I'm here to move your violence out and move you instead towards being with God and with each other. The resistance that we have to God's work of making us with God and with one another is sin. It's scapegoating. Somebody's got to pay. It's excluding. Well, somebody doesn't belong. And it's death. Something's got to die. Jesus, the forgiving victim, offers his body and blood to us on the cross, even at our worst, and he continues to do that to us at the Eucharist. It's my body. Here's my blood. And he does this in hopes that the church's imagination for what it means to be human can finally be reshaped. That's what we're doing here, having our imaginations reshaped about what it's possible in this world, having our imaginations reshaped about who God actually is, having our imaginations reshaped about what it actually means to live a human life. No longer buying into the lie of redemptive violence. No longer glorifying suffering. No longer blaming victims. No longer believing that sometimes you just got to get your hands a little bit dirty to make the world work. The cross is God's fundamental no to all of those ways of death. And instead, Jesus Christ crucified by us shows us that God does not respond in approval to Jesus' death. No, God so strongly disapproves of his unjust murder that he resurrected Jesus, brought him back to life, and rejects all of our murderous ways by undoing death entirely. The message of the cross is foolishness to people like us who always think that eventually somebody's got to pay for this. So we dare not normalize it or be embarrassed by it, church. We preach Christ crucified because God freely came to bring us into peace with God and with each other. You don't have to be at war with one another. That we can live on earth and in heaven with no more violence. That we can truly be at peace. And the word for being with God and the word for being with each other that Jesus' cross ultimately points towards is communion.
Find more resources to help you lead a Jesus-centered life at holyfamilyhtx.org. Again, it's holyfamilyhtx.org.